Welcome to McGuire on the Wire, where you'll discover top stories and strategies in specialty tax broken down by our experts. You'll also meet leaders from across the firm who will discuss McGuire Sponsel's approach to common challenges faced by our clients.
Happy holidays, Jerry.
Thank you, Tim.
That's a busy time of year for us.
Yes, it is.
It is. It's interesting. I always look at this time of year. You got the holidays, you got tax planning, you got hunting, all the things that I know you love to do, right? I think the really cool part about this time of year is we start to reflect. And you've obviously been in this industry for a long time. So when we look at reflecting, one of the things that I'd like to cover today, and I think it's something that you've probably done in your sleep for many of years, but you know, I'd really like to just reflect on kind of how you started with Specialty Tax Services. One, your relationship with McGuire Sponsel, I know has been since back in 2000 and maybe 2005.
Yes.
Right?
2005. Yeah. Real close, yeah.
Real close. So 2005, and we're fortunate enough to have you on our team now full-time. But it's been really interesting to learn from you. I've been able to learn a lot, not only from just kind of how to go to market, but thinking more like a CPA and just getting an idea of kind of what they do, their day in and day out processes, and really going into tax planning is when it really starts to kind of sit in.
Well, honestly, Tim, practicing for 34 years, it's hard not to think like a CPA, candidly. So that's kind of fun. And I think reflective is a good word to use. I think not only are we reflective, our CPA firm clients are reflective, and their clients are reflective. You get into October, November-ish, and guess what? That window of uncertainty of what your year is going to look like, it's getting narrower and narrower, right? And the reflective part is, gosh, we've done some things well this year, or, oh my gosh, I didn't realize we were that far behind in these two areas. And maybe there's some disappointments, right? If they're being objective and honest about it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, so the planning part could go many ways. It could be, hey, this isn't going to be a very good year, but we can still generate credits or deductions and do some carrybacks, right?
Yeah.
And help this business that's going to need some cash in the first quarter. Or it could be, oh my gosh, we've made more money this year than we really anticipated. Man, my tax bill's huge, mm-hmm. right? And so there's planning there either way,
yeah.
you know, depending on where they're going with where they're ending up in their financial results.
Well, how did you typically strategize from a timing standpoint? Funny, I was talking to a really close relationship of mine the other day, and he said, man, he's like, I'm looking at my schedule. He says, I have 50 to 60 tax planning conversations over the next 2 months.
Yeah.
So when you go into that, what is the thought and kind of how do you strategize to go in to make sure that you're efficient during those meetings?
Well, I would say a couple things, and this probably won't shock you since you've known me for 3 years now, mm-hmm. a little longer, but worked hand in hand for 3 years. Yeah, I've always been a tax guy, but I'm not an exact guy. And I think that's the thing I've approached planning is, look, it's a grenade launch, right? I mean, mm-hmm. here's a direction we're going. If you try to get all the detailed numbers and all of that, you'll never accomplish all your planning meetings.
Yeah.
So I always try to start my planning in October. Give me your best guess of what November, December is going to be. Get a lot of the direction going. And then, you know what, touch base in December and let's just tweak it based on how close that guess was. And then I think you can get more done in December.
Okay. And looking at that, so when you went in with these client conversations, and you, one thing I learned from you, and I've actually had a lot of conversations about this since you first talked about this, is you kind of had this 10-point checklist that you went through.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And part of that 10-point checklist, you always told me, is especially tax was a part of that as well.
Absolutely.
What was the thought behind that? Why did you approach it that way?
Well, the thought behind that is I think I had a lot of mentors over the year that said, you know, look, learn your client's business, right? And as much time as you spend learning that client's business, they're going to know it 10, 20 times better than you do, no matter how much time you spend trying to learn it. But what they don't know is all of the tax knowledge, all of the things available. Mm-hmm. And so my job, I always felt as a tax consultant and business advisor was, okay, let's have this conversation. What's going on in your business this year? And what knowledge do I have that I can listen and then make that connection and plug in my knowledge to help them based on what they're doing? Could be activities, could be investments, could be expansion, could be a multitude of things.
Mm-hmm. You didn't feel like you had to know everything, though. That was the nice thing about it, because you felt like you had strategic partners that
TJ,
supported you.
Yeah, I mean, TJ and I talk all the time. You don't have to know everything. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of resources. We have a lot of technical people here. I had a lot of technical people at the firm I was at prior to when I practiced. Mm-hmm. You know, but I think the number one thing you need to do is you need to be present, asking the questions, listening, right?
Correct.
And really, I think there's two things that really help advisors. One is being present, getting in front of your clients. And then the second thing is just showing that you care. And by showing you care, I'm not talking about walking in and hugging them or anything like that. Right. What I mean by care
is... You would do that, though.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But showing them you care, to me, means that you're listening, like you're engaging. You're not there just to have the meeting and say, okay, net income's X, we can do this. Okay, thanks, good job, let's go. No, showing you care is understanding about, hey, what challenges did you face this year? What were some new endeavors you guys did?
Yeah.
What were the speed bumps? Did competitors throw you a curveball? Really diving down, not into the numbers, but just what did they have to do as a management team and an owner that year to pivot and adapt? Owning a business is like being in a runaway carriage, right? You're holding on to the reins and hopefully you don't drop them.
Yep.
You know, and you're going to hit rocks, you're going to hit bumps. You just have to be able to manage and pivot and guide that team. And hopefully at the end of the year, you get them to stop and they're under control.
Yeah. No, that's really good to hear, because I mean, when I think about it, as I go out and I'm spending a lot of time on the road right now and sitting down with CPAs and talking kind of through some of our things that they're offering to their clients, a lot of the concern is I've got some people that just really don't know this stuff. And it's mm-hmm. like, okay, and we understand that, right? We don't go and expect them to know all the recipe for our services, right? We just want to be able to provide them some sort of guidance of, okay, if you hear these things. So when going back the kind of that 10-point checklist, when you originally had that, I assume specialty tax wasn't originally there, but as you added that, what were kind of some of the triggers? And obviously I know a lot of the triggers, but what were some of the triggers back then when you first started this to just have your people, your managers, your senior managers that were sitting down having discussions with clients, what were some of the triggers that you put in front of them saying, hey, these are the things that you have to be listening for?
Well, even before I get to the triggers, what I would tell you is that I joined this regional firm to lead tax services in 1999. And it was in December, okay? So, you know, just learning the firm, learning the talent we had. And so when I assessed that, one of the things I knew right away is, yeah, we can develop internally people, but that's a 3-5-7 year process to develop some of the expertise we need. There are some things that I said, looking at it objectively, you know, that's an engineering approach. Am I gonna invest in engineers as a CPA firm? Probably not.
Yeah.
Because do I have enough revenue to keep them busy year round? Okay. Yep. So the only option then would be I'd have to turn it into a full business, which means I have to market outside. You got your hands full at a CPA firm, just managing your clients and serving them properly to be a great advisor to them. So I actually partnered early on and outsourced in the areas of international tax, in the areas of DISC, in the areas of R&D, in the areas of COSEG. Mm-hmm. Those were the four primary areas that we did. Also had real estate tax abatement advisors. Those were things we couldn't do in-house with the team we had, and it was going to take a long time to develop that. And due to just competition in the marketplace, I couldn't wait. Mm-hmm. And that's one aspect. The other aspect is I couldn't have the level of technical competence and ability that a firm that just focuses in those engineered-driven areas we had already.
Right.
So I didn't have to invest a lot of money. You know, all I had to do is build a relationship, have conversations about our culture, how we serve our clients, how we go to market, and figure out a cohesive strategy with those outsourced firms that blended in, and it felt like my firm was delivering that service.
Yeah.
So, but getting back to this top 10 list, what I felt like we needed was just a reminder for our staff and our managers and folks dealing with clients. Hey, I'm going out to see a contractor today, right? What are 10 things of value that I can add, okay? And I'm not gonna go in there with this checklist and just focus on that and drive the conversation. Remember, I'm still going in to listen. What challenges did you face this year? Because when you start asking those questions, they'll start telling you that, oh gosh, we were doing a poor job estimating. I had to hire 5 estimators. Okay, well, what is that? I mean, is there any R&D opportunity there? You know, in that aspect. So you listen to what they did. And we didn't talk numbers or dollars. It's all conceptual. It's high level.
Yeah. I'd imagine tax planning is a little stressful for clients. I would assume. Well, I've never done it with somebody, but I would imagine it's a little bit stressful.
It's a little bit stressful, but what I would tell you, if you do it the right way, it's almost a relief.
Yeah.
Right? Because you take the mystery and the mystique out of it, and then you may leave. You don't solve the problem in the planning meeting. So you're listening and you're writing down some of the key things that are important. If income's way up, and maybe as they've grown, the receivables have expanded, so their cash is being strained. Okay, well, what things did they do this year that we can turn into tax deductions or a tax credit that helps throw some equity back in here and helps give them some cash flow?
Yep, that's exactly what I was thinking. Mm-hmm. When I was saying that, I was thinking, okay, you probably go in and there's some negatives that come up.
Oh, sure.
Well, how do you leave those, right? And is there an opportunity here for us to save some money?
Yeah, as I've mentored staff and mentored people and everything, I'll be honest, some of my closest relationships were because they were unhappy with something. And you know what? It shows your true character and how you work through that. Mm-hmm. So you can't go into something worrying that you don't know everything. You have a conversation, you show you care, and then guess what? You solve the problem.
Yeah.
And the way you solve the problem builds deeper relationships.
Yeah. Well, and I can tell you, we've learned not just kind of externally with our relationships, but internally how we can support that more, right? Mm-hmm. It's one of those things where, you know, our marketing team, along with our relationship team, and then the shareholders, we've come up with a tax funding guide over the last 3 years, right?
Yeah, and it's improved. And every year, it's gotten a little better.
Every year,
sure.
Right? And so now we're out in market. We're showing this tax planning guide. And guess what? CPAs are coming up and saying, hey, can I get this in some sort of like 10-point checklist? I'm like, you know what? It's amazing, right?
Yep.
We've produced this thing that we just thought was just going to be supportive as they were talking to their clients. But now they're wanting it in front of them as mm-hmm. they go out and talk to their clients.
It started out being informative. And now it's turned into a tool they can use for planning meetings.
Yeah. No, yeah. It's been great. And, you know, looking at it this year, we've really kind of broken down, being that our services have expanded, right? Mm-hmm. We've really had to break down individual, you know, pre-IRA to post-IRA, all the things that have come along with it. And we've broke all that down, and I think it's come out fantastic. So
yeah.
Looking at that and talking about the tax planning guide and going back to the triggers that we were talking about, if you were sitting down with a client today, okay, and let's just say, for example, you had fixed assets in front of you, which obviously we have a full line underneath that. And
sure.
They started talking about, okay, here's some things that we've done over the past 2 years. We newly constructed a building. We just purchased another location. We actually have to expand the location we're in. What are some of the things that you would discuss with them at that time?
Well, the first thing is, and not necessarily in any order, but the first thing is, oh my gosh, if you're looking at expansion or you're doing something, maybe it's a new location, maybe it's getting closer to transportation hubs, maybe it's to go find a better employee base, right? Incentives. And so the first thing I'm going to do is understand more about that expansion. How far along are they? Are they already committed, right? Or is there an opportunity to still have some leverage to go out and get them some payroll credits, go out and get them some real estate tax abatements, you mm-hmm. know, on the credits and incentive side, which we call location advisory services. I want to find out where they're at, because that one is so sensitive about timing. That's going to be the first thing that pops in my head.
Yeah, and you know what? The timing portion of that is a challenge.
It is.
Right? Because if you think about it as a CPA, you're down, you're doing the work that's coming in, and sometimes it comes in, it's like, oh, what's this? What's this growth that we've had?
Sure.
Oh, well, we added 20-some people, and we just had a $3 million investment.
Mm-hmm. And it is a challenge, because I think as close of relationships I had with my clients, I had a few where, you know, you always want to get to that business advisor role with your clients where you're the first phone call, right? Mm-hmm. And a lot of them I was. But there's times where they're thinking strategically and operationally about their business. And so the first thing they're going to is, hey guys, from an operational level, where do we need to be? So that's an internal conversation with their leadership. The second thing they're looking at is, oh my gosh, how do we finance this? So now they're talking to their banker, right? Mm-hmm. So a lot of times CPAs don't get pulled in until, you know, maybe step three.
Yep.
And so hopefully they haven't signed on a land purchase. They haven't gone too far down that path that you've already given up your leverage on the location advisory. But it's a challenge.
It is. And do you look at that as something, knowing that, right, that mm-hmm. it's something you can actually utilize to be more consultative with your clients?
It is. And I think what always gets in the way is they're busy, you're busy timing that out. But it doesn't have to be a three-hour strategy session.
Mm-mm.
I mean, it can be a one-hour lunch with your client saying, not how much money are you making, you know, but asking those questions about, hey, what's going on in your industry? What's going on with your competitors? What are you doing to pivot this year?
Mm-hmm.
You know, just high level discussions, and I've never met a business owner where they didn't want to talk about their business. Yeah, okay, it's the number one thing they want to talk about.
Absolutely.
They don't care if I come out and tell them about the new regulation coming out, new IRS notice and guidance. I mean, that's a sleeper for them.
Yeah.
So I always try to ask them questions. If they would talk 50 minutes out of that lunch, that's a good lunch. Because I learned a tremendous amount from them.
Yeah, and one thing that our teams learned too is we've been more strategic internally with having ways to alleviate a lot of that burden to where there doesn't necessarily even need to be a conversation.
Yeah.
Right? We've got our one-pagers saying, okay, if you're going to do this, this, or this, we need to have a conversation way in advance.
Absolutely.
Because it's never too early to have a conversation about location advisor services.
Yeah. And so the regional firm I was at had 10 offices, right? So a big priority for me was if you were a client of the firm's, I wanted you to get the same level of service no matter which office that you were a client of, right? Mm-hmm. And so a lot of the reasons I came out with this 10-point list, they all weren't 10 points, you know, but we just called it a 10-point checklist, was to make sure that our staff, our managers, our partners were asking and focusing on the same type of issues for every client that they have. Mm-hmm. And so trying to raise that level of consistency and that deliverable was one of my key objectives leading the tax practice.
Yeah, smart. Smart. Well, looking back then and going back to the purchase and the newly construction, obviously, yes, location advisory service is the first thing that pops to mind. But with what we've prepared from a tax planning guide, as you're sitting down, what's the next thing you're looking at there?
Yeah, and again, like I said, location advisory is timing specific, right?
Yeah.
The next place I would pivot would be the, obviously, depreciation. Do we want to maximize depreciation deductions this year?
Mm-hmm.
You know, do we have the basis? Do we have everything in place to utilize the deductions? And candidly, I mean, I would look from a timing standpoint there, depreciation is so flexible.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe, you know, you could defer a cost seg study until January.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because maybe that's when maybe the tax ordinary income tax rate is going to be higher in that following year than the year you're planning for.
Yep.
I mean, there's just a multitude of things there that you have to evaluate. But obviously, depreciation, you know, trying to carve out that 39-year life and accelerate it into 5, 7, 10-year buckets to get those deductions. Bonus depreciation has been an unbelievable boondoggle for taxpayers.
Yeah.
And you don't go into those discussions saying, okay, accelerate, accelerate, accelerate. I think that's why I aligned with TJ and Dave specifically back in the day, and then McGuire Sponsel when it was formed in 07, was because they knew partnering with the CPA, I, on that other side of the table, I can look at basis, I know tax rates, I know their income situation. So with their technical knowledge on the fixed asset side, we're specifically talking about, with my knowledge of the client and where they're going, we can pair those together, and it's a much more powerful deliverable to the client.
Yeah. Yeah, and I couldn't agree more. It's actually one of the more easily identified opportunities, right, is looking at that as a whole. But moving into some other opportunities, I think looking at, like, let's just call it manufacturing. Okay, when you sit down with a manufacturing client, there's a ton of opportunity, I feel like.
Tremendous.
You know, and as you're having those discussions with someone that's in that industry, what are some of the ways that you can approach? And again, you're obviously there listening, okay? You've been very upfront with that. So you're listening, you're figuring out kind of what some of the things that they're struggling with, what are some of the planning tools they needed to have. But when you're sitting there listening to that, what are some of the things you're listening for? For example, R&D tax credits, okay? So what pops to mind when you think of that?
I'm not going to hit the low-hanging fruit first. Here's what I'm going to tell you. So when
I didn't expect you to.
If I picked up a new client, I mean, I always call myself a curious cat, right?
Okay.
Because I don't want to go in there talking about their financial operations and their financial statement and tax. The first thing I do is I want to go around and get to know their operations, look at their facility, understand how they staff, you know, how much automation do they have, what's their employee base look like, what's their leadership team and what are their roles. I want to understand their business. And we had something at the firm I was at that we actually had TJ come in, and he was a guest speaker and part of that. But we try to develop our seniors and our managers to think about the life cycle of a business. And I don't mean life cycle of it's incorporated and then it gets mature and then, gosh, it becomes less relevant and they have to liquidate or sell. I'm talking about the day-to-day, the annual life cycle of how do they improve their products? What are their products? Where do they get their materials? Where do they get their labor force? How do they go to market to sell? How do they get ideas back from their clients on what things they need to do to tweak their products and things? And then how do they manufacture it? And then how do they deliver it? And how do they bill it? I try to go through that cycle. And because I think that core understanding of that business is crucial to have a foundation to then listen to things maybe that are a little different. How did they pivot off of that this year?
Well, that's amazing because I didn't think of it that way. But when you're sitting there mm-hmm. talking about it like that, obviously I'm sitting here on the other side of the table. I'm an R&D guy, right?
Right.
I'm looking for triggers on R&D tax credits. But as you say that, well, that opportunity looks at process improvements. Okay.
Absolutely.
Probably discuss on any process improvements they've had. They also talk on any new products that they may have developed that year. Mm-hmm. Okay. Any testing that they shipped out, anything that they needed to have testing done, right?
New standards maybe that they had to adhere to
yep.
that were implemented this year that only if you're in that industry, you're aware of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you're getting a whole picture to other things that they obviously could utilize. But mm-hmm. just sitting here, I'm thinking, wow, I have never thought about strategically asking those questions to figure out if there's multiple opportunities, let alone just R&D tax credits.
Yeah.
Right.
And I'm not going to say like the 1,000 clients maybe that I was in charge of or whatever. And maybe I exaggerated. Maybe it was only 500. I don't know. But I didn't know every client. It's impossible to know every client to that level. But my key core clients, you know, the 80-20 rule, that was an absolute, I knew those clients. Mm-hmm. Okay. And I spent time knowing those clients. And to be honest with you, I know I'm a tax CPA, but details were never my love, okay? So
yeah.
I like the strategy, I like the planning and all of that. So those discussions, I would always tilt towards those kinds of business advisory discussions because I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And for me, what I really liked getting out of that was I would try mentally to put myself, okay, I'm an owner with Doug in this company. Maybe he owns 100% of it, but for that day, I'm pretending I'm an owner with Doug.
Okay.
And I'm talking about our business, right?
Yeah.
And just, I want that level of understanding. But getting back to triggers, you hit on some of them. It's really easy, okay? Gosh, we're having trouble getting people, right? So we're looking and evaluating. We just got two new pieces of equipment. And immediately you might think depreciation, right? Well, that's a slam dunk.
Yes.
The other side of it is, well, wait a minute, what did this equipment do for you? Why did you make that $2 million investment in this machinery or this equipment? Well, it's because we're struggling getting people. We automated our line. Well, process improvements is an absolute trigger for research and developmental credit.
Yeah. 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 That's great. Appreciate you sharing that. So going to the place that there's a lot of confusion with, and it's ever changing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really interested to hear what you have to say about this because I know a lot of our relationships, one, they either stay away from it because they just don't know enough about it and they would prefer to stay in their lane, which is understandable, or two, it's overwhelming to them, okay? And they're doing it, but from a time standpoint, it's not making sense for them, right?
Right.
They've got to get it to somebody to get done. It has to be reviewed. It comes back to them. There's things that are missed. They got to get back. This back and forth game, right, of just figuring out how to get it accomplished. And obviously, I'm sure you know, I'm going to talk about international tax.
Yeah.
Our GBS team has really taken off a huge burden for a lot of our firms. But to those that maybe haven't started down this road, or they're in there and just can't quite figure out how to separate it, when you were doing this back in the day, how did you strategize for things that were just kind of, and I'm not going to put anything above your head, Jerry, because I know you got it all in place, right? But how did you strategize for international tax discussions?
Well, here's what I would tell you. I'm going to back up a little bit, just like I did on the business advisory side. So Title 26 is the Internal Revenue Code, okay? And what you got to understand is individuals that major in accounting and they come out with a firm, they're going into auditing or tax or maybe business valuation, you know, some segment of the CPA firm. Gaining the knowledge that you need to have is like drinking from a fire hose,
mm-hmm.
okay? So most of the people, you focus on the technical skills that help them with U.S. tax issues and understanding partnerships, understanding S corporations, understanding C corporations and tax provisions. International tax is kind of like two more levels down of complexity and knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
So most CPA firms are so focused on the blocking and tackling of just all of the income tax issues they need to learn and understand and develop in their teams that it takes a while for somebody that has mastered all of that to then start to specialize in international tax. So for medium-sized firms, it's an area that they just don't invest a lot of time in. Now, that said, it's an area where, yeah, there's a lot of risk, there's a lot of penalties, there's a lot of things going on there that should have more of your investment and your time, but you only have so many hours in the day. And so when I was, you know, at the regional firm, it kept me up at night. You know, number one, I really didn't know how much I had in terms of how much the firm had in international reporting for our U.S. returns. I didn't have a handle on the size of the revenue volume. How much do I invest in resources to get that tackled, to get it properly computed, filed, and do a great job for our clients? One of the things I did at Blue, I mentioned that there was 10 offices, right? You know, knowing what we had as a firm, we did a lot of data mining. Okay, we were a CCH access shop, and so to understand what we had out there, I data mined. So I knew by the office, by industry, what kinds of returns we had. Okay. And as part of that, I had an idea of, okay, we have, let's say, 50 returns that have international reporting requirements. Okay, well, who in the firm is doing that work?
Yeah.
Is it spread to 20 people? Mm-hmm. Now that makes me nervous, okay? Is it concentrated in three, and how well are we doing that so we know that we have some consistency with it?
Yeah.
And at the time, McGuire Sponsel didn't have a solution. I mean, that solution for CPAs that McGuire Sponsel provided was in 2020. Mm-hmm. And it's constantly been developed and improved since 2020. So I outsourced to a couple different providers until I found the right one at the time. But I outsourced the review function of that. We prepped it internally, but I wanted to make sure somebody was looking at that really understood the rules in that complex area.
Yeah. Well, you know what's amazing is I'm sure you didn't come over to McGuire Sponsel thinking that you were going to jump into the international tax game.
I didn't, but I know how important it is to CPA firms. And candidly, one of the things I'll tell you is I don't project that I have all the answers, and I'm okay with that, right? So one of the things is I'm not an international tax guy. Now, I've learned a little bit, and I actually took the AICPA's course, and Jason Rao always jokes that I've got my international certificate. Yeah. But again, like I advised my clients when I was practicing, I'm a strategic advisor to our GBS team. Okay, what talent do we need? How do we get this message out to CPA firms? And how can we support them best? Mm-hmm. And that's my focus. Yep. That's what I bring to the table.
Yeah.
I'm not going to tell you that I'm an international expert. I know enough now to identify things that, oh my gosh, we need to get Greg involved in this, or John Boder, we need to get Jason Rao here, or wow, this firm has identified the compliance and they've done the compliance, but maybe they haven't done 100% of reporting. They haven't gotten transfer pricing engagements completed on all those. So then it's real easy then to say, oh gosh, hey, you guys, you really have these five clients that you didn't do transfer pricing studies on. Why don't you talk to the client and we'll do this transfer pricing study for you? Well, that's not fair, yeah. Right? You're putting the CPA firm in a position that, gosh, how do I go to this client and tell them that, hey, you probably should have had a transfer pricing study done, but you didn't.
Yeah.
Well, we can help with those conversations. We know how to couch that. And so the CPA doesn't have to go alone to their client. We can be supportive, and we're going to be supportive because we're going to the market with them, right?
Yeah.
That means having those tough conversations with them and supporting them so the client understands this is a complex area, right? And there aren't always black and white answers. We can help with those conversations.
And you guys have done a really good job. I mean, Jason, now Greg, being added to the team, it's definitely a robust area where we can help out with those conversations, I would agree. I've been a part of those. A lot of times we're going into them a little bit of angst, right? The CPA is a little nervous. But I also know that just from a review standpoint, sometimes they can say, hey, you know, we've had another firm review, right? They've looked at some of your 5471s, your 5472s. Mm-hmm. There's some things that we need to have some discussions on. And that kind of opens it up, right? This post-COVID era, right, is really kind of opened our eyes to seeing what the IRS is really looking at. And prior to that, I don't know, transfer pricing study may not have been as relevant at the time, but I know it is now, right?
Well, and I think, you know, another big focus is TCJA, right? So one of the big changes there was repatriating income, whether you distributed or not, back to the U.S.
Yeah.
There was a big focus and push on these companies are hiding money offshore, right? Well, we're going to catch them all, you know? And so I think there have been some events in the last 3-4 years where you know, we can help have those conversations about this heightened scrutiny, right?
Yeah.
And so I think there's just ways we can have those conversations to help them with those. And you mentioned Greg. Greg's been a great addition to the practice. I mean, Jason has been out there. Jason's super knowledgeable, knows CPA firms, knows the culture, and he's been very, very helpful. But that area has grown so much, we need to have two practice leaders. And it really was a blessing to have Jason on board, but then also to be able to add Greg this past November.
Yeah.
So it just doubles our bench strength, our capacity, and just the depth of the knowledge of our practice.
Yeah. So. I think that, and the one thing that I've noticed, the most important thing is to get Jason or Greg just in a conversation with our mm-hmm. relationships. It's amazing to see it grow from there because, honestly, we don't know with it. We don't know, right? And our CPAs are in the same boat. So we sit down, and a lot of times it's interesting is a firm that has maybe some sort of international presence.
Sure.
Doing it in some sort of fashion, right? Those are the firms we work better with. And I say that, not that we don't have these other firms that don't have it and that we work good with, but the thing that I'm noticing is there's some common knowledge. And it's like, okay, well, we're not here to take over and supplant this international tax. We're just here to support it.
Right.
And next thing you know, they're like, well, hey, well, we don't do transfer pricing studies.
Right.
Oh, okay. But we know we need it done. And well, can your team do that for
most
us?
Of those, right? Most of those conversations, Tim, it's interesting. It's Jason likes to call them fireside chats on international. So it's really getting an understanding of what they have internally. Mm-hmm. And I don't use, my terms are more complement, not compete. Because this is one of the areas that I'm very, very conscious coming from the other side of, okay, this is the CPA firm's lane, right? Yeah. We're not going to jump in that lane unless they ask us to and tell us they need the help.
Yeah.
I think when we first rolled out the international practice, I wasn't here in January 2020, but a lot of firms said, well, wait a minute, we do international tax. Then as you have that conversation about, well, what's your practice look like? What are the people in that practice? And then you find out, oh, wait a minute, hey, no, we don't do that, or we don't do that.
Exactly.
And those conversations are awesome because I can tell you most firms might have one or two people. The lucky ones have had people interested in the area and they've built out a 5-6 person team maybe, right?
Mm-hmm.
But when you have one person and you're the international person inside a CPA firm, it's a lonely place,
yeah.
Right? You don't necessarily have a peer group to talk through issues, just sounding boards, and that's what we can do. And those conversations they're not product oriented. We're not coming in saying, hey, we can do this product, we can sell this product. We don't sell. Again, we're listening to what you're doing, what are the challenges you're facing, and then knowing what we can do. During that conversation, we talk about, hey, where can we help you guys with some of the heavy lifting?
Yeah.
Okay, it's as simple as that. We don't do everything for all the CPA firms we work with.
Yeah.
Right? We want to fill the gaps that they either have risk or that they're uncomfortable with, or a lot of conversations this last year on international, people are having trouble getting talent, right? So they're looking at outsourcing maybe as a solution. Well, one of the solutions with international tax is, look, if your team's spending 200-300 hours or 400 hours in international, if we could help with some of those hours and they can pivot over to your core business, you know, on the S-corps and partnerships, that would free up some capacity within your firm.
Yeah,
we've had a lot of conversations like that where complement, maybe they are doing some of that, but if they could pivot their folks to maybe some of their other core business areas, we can complement that way too.
Yeah. Well, no, and Jerry, I know we're running short on time, but it's been a pleasure being on the podcast with you today and just getting more insight from you. You know, you're so knowledgeable. You've been doing this for so long. It's nice to get a different opinion and different side of things. So I do appreciate it. You know, obviously, I think we've missed a few things. I really wanted to kind of get into property tax appeals, but you and I can talk for days. And I do believe this is maybe Tim and Jerry's first part, right? We're going to have a couple
sure.
other parts, maybe dive into each practice a little bit more,
right.
Talk about those into depth. I know we went into GBS a little bit more than the others, but I think it's good to focus on some of the things that are really, really kind of those hard conversations this time of year. So
they are. And Tim, I would just add that the reason I aligned with McGuire Sponsel when I was at this other firm so many years ago was the approach. Okay, we talked about going to the market through CPA firms. That's just one of those statements that's easy to say, but there's a lot behind that. When I'm talking about the approach, I'm talking about we don't know everything, mm-hmm. okay? But we have committed to this partnership and this relationship. We're going to listen, right? And we're going to approach it with humbleness. We're going to approach it with candor. And we're going to build a relationship so that we can understand how we can complement that CPA firm. And we'll figure out the technical side. If we're missing a technical piece, I can tell you that if we don't do it, I can guarantee you we're going to work just as hard to find somebody that we're not even related to that can come in and solve their problem.
Yeah.
It is very relationship driven, and that's what I've enjoyed about practicing so many years are the relationships that I've built throughout all those years.
That's key. No, I agree. And it's, yeah, it goes back, relationships above all, right?
Relationships above all, and just being committed to being there for your clients and your partners.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I appreciate it again. And for all those who are listening, our tax planning guide is on the web. So if you want to see more about that, please visit McGuireSponsel.com. If you have any additional questions, please reach out to your closest contact here at McGuire Sponsel. Thank you all for listening.
Thank you, Dan.
This has been McGuire on the Wire. Thanks so much for listening. If you enjoyed the show, be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts and follow us on social @McGuireSponsel to get more industry news and firm updates.